Hi, this is Heidi Hollis from AlienAdvice.com, and you're listening to the Hot Boys at Ghostly Talk.
We'll be right back. email now. You can visit me online at www.ufoguide.com. It's ufoguide.com. But only when you're not listening to Ghost Talk, which you should always be listening to.
Train wreck.
That was about as much fun as one too.
Yeah.
No, we had it all planned. I mean, he's like, you guys didn't get to hear this because that's in our headphones.
Yeah, you're
not on the
screen. Out in Radio Land and we're behind Radio Land.
Right. And while we're here, we hear a lot of things go through our headphones. And Scott L says, "Oh yeah, you got to kick it right. You know, kick it, meaning you know, bring us back in channel right after the drums kick in. Right. So the drums kick in, but then they kept going and they kept going for four beats and he's like, oh, forget it.
This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott Allen.
I'm Doug.
I'm Will.
And we are still on the phone here with Mr. Francis Sempier. Did I do it? I screwed it up again.
Sempier. It's like Pier, right?
Sempier.
Only with Semp in front of it. So Sempier.
Well, everything's French on
here. Sempier.
Sempier. Oh, jeez. All right, I'll figure it out. You know,
isn't
I'll do it.
Huh? Isn't there a tennis star, Pete something? No, Sampras. Never mind. Okay, forget it.
Hey, they just announced the writer of the movie Jaws, or the book Jaws,
yeah,
just died.
The writer of the book Jaws just passed away.
Peter Benchley?
Yes.
Peter Benchley.
No way.
65 years old.
Oh, my God. 65?
Talk about music in movies.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
whose heart did not go along with the beat?
Doo-doo. When you hear that, now that's something that's carried on since that movie came out, Francis, and I think it's a great example right there. It's been more used in slapstick stuff a lot. I've seen where, you know, you'll hear that sound, dun-dun, dun-dun, and then like somebody will, like the evil mother will come out or something like that and scare all the little kids. But that's a theme right there.
Okay, I want to see your horror movie when you the evil mother comes out and scares all the kids.
Mine will make zero sense.
100 zombies come after you after you're like.
But that's
me.
But at its very core, the original film Jaws, right?
Right.
Oh, of course.
I mean, and I don't know anybody on the planet that can't play that on the piano either. Anybody can play that on the piano. Even I can play that on the piano, and I'm an idiot when it comes to piano. All you need to know is two notes, and you have to have some rhythm.
Even an ounce of rhythm will get it to you.
Yeah, yeah. But that's a theme right there. That I mean, when you hear that now, when you hear that theme, that what I mean. I don't even know if it's really a composition, but I mean, it represents the shark.
It's like two notes.
It represents the shark, though. You think you hear that you hear dun-dun. And then you see the fin, right?
Yeah.
And then you see all the
cutting
kids
through the water. Yeah. Everyone's screaming.
Yeah. And yeah, of course. Yeah. And then you have all the people that are completely oblivious to the fish, mm-hmm. except for you, the viewer, right? And they're all on their wraps and their little Willy Wonka water things or whatever. And then they get their leg hacked off by the shark. You know? Okay, cool. But that music right there. I mean, you hear that, you know it. You know what that's gonna. It's not gonna be good usually either. That,
right. It's never like, oh, here's your present.
That the Death Star theme, the Death Star theme, the theme from Star Wars. You hear that, you're like, oh.
Right. I know something's coming. Something's on its way. Yeah. I don't want to be here anymore. Yeah.
One thing we need to know about this film, Morrow Road, Francis, and I know we want to talk about this a little bit. This is an independent film. This is why we're really excited to hear about this. This is an independent film being done by your company. And you guys are doing this. I mean, I don't think we want to get into any details about that, but it's being done on pretty much, you know, a small budget, and you guys are doing the best you can with that budget. I mean, how that must be very, very difficult, all I can say. It can't be easy to do that. I mean, what are the things are you guys running into any issues with that right now?
Oh, well, not now, but if you were to rewind 2 months ago, we had to basically cut our expenses 40% without hurting the film.
Oh, man.
And, I mean, that is no easy task, and it took us 5 weeks of combing through the budget of, okay, you know, what can we do, and who can we get to, you know, maybe lower their fee, if they're even being paid. And what else can we do, you know, to do this, that, and the other? And it can range from something as small as fundraisers to efficiency, such as reducing the shooting, you know, days.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you got to watch what this hurts. You know, what's the you know, cause and effect? What's the effect of reducing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, now the days are more hurried, or you know, there's less room to be more creative, which is never an option on
mm-hmm.
the film.
Mm-hmm.
So we always had to come up with many, many creative ways. And basically, many of my friends and some other people I know, you know, formed a committee and, okay, you know, what can you do and what can you do? And you know, it spread out basically through Southeast Michigan and come back, and they're just like, okay, this is what we can do and this is what we can do.
Mm.
You know, and again, and the reason we can make such a high-quality independent film is because, you know, again, you know, we're going to use Star Wars, you know, similar, I'm sorry, a camera similar to Star Wars Episode 3, and this is uncompressed high definition.
Yes.
And not a lot of independent films can do this. And how we're getting away with this, again, is because of the connections we have. I mean, I went to school for, you know, sound arts and expression center for digital arts in California.
Mm-hmm.
Phenomenal school, and a really neat school, because instead of their core classes being math and English, they were film,
mm-hmm.
filmmaking. So, and I basically hung around that department for the entire time, got my degree as more of a backup, and went into full-blown independent filmmaking. And because of the skills I have and the friends I've made and the skills they have, we can eliminate, you know, certain costs, like, you know, 95% of post-production costs are free
mm.
for us, because I have the equipment, and that's what I do. And again, my fiance, you know, she, you know, and we actually own our software, believe it or not, although
mm-hmm.
probably didn't start that way, but, you know, we own our, we use Adobe and all these other products, and Hope uses Maya Unlimited, you know, New 7 just came out, and again, my friend Jeff R. Wadey, he's got all the recording equipment and knowledge for music composition for scores. That's pretty much your post-production, I mean, in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm.
And pre-production, well, you know, to be honest, I mean, almost any independent film, you know, should be able to claim that as pretty much low cost.
Mm.
Because no one pays themselves to write.
Yeah.
Right.
As nice as that would be. And, you know, but we have had some connections that some indie films don't get, such as full-blown storyboards, you know, through a professional, again, a friend
uh-huh.
I met, and through another independent film, and, you know, things like that. But, no, we have no, you know, pre-production costs either, and we basically are fundraising our cast.
Well, and a lot of that...
We're just getting paid very little, by the way.
And I, that's when
so they're, you're not separating the red M&Ms out for anybody, right? They're all going to get whatever happens to come out the package from the Speedway.
Mm-hmm.
And right. That's what they get. Well, I'm interested in this. This is something that personally interests me, because one of the things we've done over the past year is gone completely independent.
Yeah.
We're playing only independent music
yeah.
on our breaks.
Everything.
Only independent music. I on my signature, I even said this during the break, and it's so true. On my signature, in the very few emails that I ever send out, and also on the message boards, it says fan of everything indie.
Mm-hmm.
I talk about tone and niche until people want to just poke my eyes out with a stick.
And we tried doing that yesterday.
And they did. They actually came at me with a stick,
mm-hmm.
and but I was faster.
Yeah,
it just happened to be, you know.
Doug is a black belt in
indie. I had just took a swig of Diet Pepsi. I was all set, and boom, I was out of there. You know, independent everything. And but what I'm realizing that this is difficult. I mean, it's very, very difficult for people. Tone and Niche fund all their own stuff. You guys are going around calling in favors, it sounds like. And, you know, hey, you're my friend. Could you just, you know, put these many hours in? Or could you, you know, scam this camcorder for a day? Or, you know, whatever. And so you're running around calling in favors and all that stuff to put into your production. I saw on a clip on, like, I don't know, it was one of the mass channels, you know, that that are on your TV, huge channels. And there was actually a couple of people walking around L.A. with billboards, like sandwich boards, you know, that you wear over your your head, and one's on the front, one's on the back, you know, and they had, like, a coffee can, and they're like, help fund our independent film, right? And they're with a coffee can.
Yeah.
And at, standing at street corners. And and it's difficult because there are things you've got to pay. Not particularly for your situation, because, you know, I want to go a little bit broader than that. For independent filmmakers and independent music makers and independent everything out there, what are those challenges and how can you overcome them? Like, can you solicit donations? And even then, what happens if you become the next, you know, Steven Spielberg? You know, then do you feel you owe something to donators? I don't know how that finance stuff works for independent projects like this, but I do know I'm a fan of independent everything, so there you go.
Yeah.
But what are the challenges? How do you get the money to do all the stuff? And you know, not you personally, but I mean in general as a independent movie maker.
Well, let's see. Taking the first part of your question, the costs. Well, any filmmaker, for instance, I am very familiar with music as well, and music is very similar, too. A film, unfortunately, costs a lot more than music, generally because you're dealing with a lot more people than music. Music, you know, you're going to be, it's like it's your band or whatever, and your whole recording expense, and then, of course, your marketing.
Right, you might have to convince a dozen people that this is a good idea.
Right. That's still a major challenge. Don't
it
get
is.
Wrong.
Oh, it is.
And then film is kind of like, well, for goodness sakes, you've got, in addition, to the marketing, it just, the amount of people it takes to do the idea, you know what I mean, usually ranges, near a crew of 40.
Mm-hmm.
If you really want to do it proper. When I say proper, I don't mean it in the way, say you do it on a crew of 10, that's not proper.
Mm.
I just mean if you really want to see a high quality, kinds of camera moves, for instance, and on a higher quality format like high definition, versus mini DV, because don't think we don't use mini DV. Okay, everything we've done up to this point has been mini DV. But, we're just so in love with this idea, we really want to give it what it deserves.
Mm.
In this case, again, very similar camera they use in episode 3, uncompressed high definition.
Mm.
But how do you afford all this? Where does the money go?
Mm.
Obviously, I'll tell you right now, in any film, unless you're Lord of the Rings, is basically almost all the money goes into the principal photography, actually shooting footage.
Mm-hmm.
In our case, as I stated earlier, it is a definite true. Because we have hardly any money going into post-production, because that's what we do. And I've got people devoted, to doing this. So, Lord of the Rings, my goodness, when you have that many special effects and you need, thousands of animators, that's different. But, to answer your first part of the question, at least for filmmaking, those are the big costs. Renting the equipment, because you can't afford it. You don't buy it, you rent it.
Yeah.
And it gets that expensive. And naturally, it needs a crew, an educated crew to run it. And some of the, really good people we've got, for instance, this is our only union thing involved in our film. But don't get me wrong, it's not a studio film. It's just some of the people we've got. Again, we got a guy that has worked on 8 Mile and 21 Grams.
Mm.
Well, there are some rules you have to adhere to, and these particular rules, actually, I don't mind. They're actually good for the most, which is just basically, if this guy's union, our cinematographer, by the way, is who I'm talking about, the person who basically runs the show as far as your camera and lighting, and when your investors, are going to give you money, a natural question for anybody investing is, where's the money going, and who's in control of this? So your cinematographer, you got to make sure it's in proven hands. That way, there's no issues. So, but this guy's killer. I mean, again, I'm not allowed to say his name yet. But he understands indie films, and he's been the DP now, the director of photography, or cinematographer, for four independent films now straight. And he loves indie films, and he even cut his prices as low as he's allowed to, you know, through the Union Lodge, because he knows how independent films don't have the money, don't have that luxury of an infinite...
Yeah, bottomless films.
Yeah, boundaryless funds. So, that's pretty much our expense. That way, you know, because, like, don't get me wrong, you get movies like Blair Witch, which was such a great idea, and the shakiness and everything like that works. You know what I mean? Works for the film. But a film like ours, you know, it doesn't. You know, it would come off, you know, much more amateurish. And there's such, you know, I don't like how some people classify independent as amateur.
A lot of people still do that, and I gotta say...
Oh, they do, and it drives me nuts.
I've seen some fine work done independently. I've seen some beautiful work done.
So, you know, Blair Witch, I think, is unquestionably the greatest marketed strategy ever.
Oh, that was genius, because I was duped by it.
I was, too.
Everybody was duped by it.
I'm like, why didn't...
It was freaky.
The entire time I'm thinking, why didn't I ever hear this legend? I'm really into this kind of stuff.
Right.
But I never heard of this one, but wow, this is a pretty cool legend.
Yeah, and the way they did it was just groundbreaking, you know? So, now, is that amateur? You know, because they didn't use Steadicams and tripods and cranes? No. You know, and that's as I'm saying, I guess some people saying it's amateur. It's like, no, the idea was still a solid idea. As a business, it had direction, you know, especially with the marketing. And to me, that's what separates amateur from indie.
Yeah.
You know, filmmakers. And indie, the only thing separating, in my opinion, indie from studio finance or corporate films is, well, obviously, A, the lack of an agenda. Like, you know, hiddenly shoving products in your face or whatever other social issue they may be pressing.
Yeah.
They're sitting around eating, like, Hostess Twinkies or something.
Right.
No, you know,
isn't that a nice clear shot of that?
Yeah.
I hate to bring it up again, but a show I've noticed a lot of that being done on, which is far from independent, too, I believe, which is a show I got hooked on like crack a couple weeks ago, was The Sopranos, okay?
Oh, okay.
God, man. I mean, every episode, there was one or two things that were just jammed right down your throat.
Right.
And I'm like, and I mean, I noticed it. I know better than a lot of people do. I like to think I do. And I saw things that came out, and I'm like, whoa, come on.
Right.
What's going on here?
You know, and again, I mean, it's not my thing. I mean, I can respect what they're doing. You know, I guess that's the the catch to your commercial-free program.
Yeah.
But although I've seen programs, for goodness sakes, that have commercials and have product placement, it's like, okay, I smell greed?
Yeah, exactly.
Anyone? I mean, what's the problem here? You know, how much cash does it take to set? I guess sometimes and almost always, in my opinion, what are the goals? Okay, of an indie film versus what are the goals of a studio film? Are your goals to be artistically sharp and get your idea across the board? Or are your goals flat out money?
Yeah,
you know, which one of those is warm and which one of those are cold?
Exactly. And you know, you'll never get the truth out of something. I mean, a director, for example. I'm an artist.
Every time.
I'm an artist, all right? You know, and I'm sure there's a lot of politics involved with all that stuff that leads up to these unfortunate incidents
right.
We see. There's a lot of stuff involved with that. I mean, I'm sure it's all out there. But, yeah, I mean, you'll never get the truth from people, unfortunately, when it comes to that. What is the website? We've talked for an hour and a half on this thing almost, and we haven't said the website one time, Francis. What is the website to check? I mean, just to keep updates on what's happening with the film.
Well, the website is www.morrow.com. Morrow.com, and Morrow's MORROW.
Of course, that'll be permanently linked to our website too, so you'll be able to go to link to it from our site too.
We have 2 minutes, you guys.
Pardon me.
We only have like 2 minutes.
Unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
But
yeah, well, that website, you know, is still under development, but they can see a little mini teaser, and by the summer they're going to see a brand new teaser that blows that one out of the water.
Ooh.
Well, this teaser is very cool. I've watched it a couple of times. So
have I. Thank
you.
I definitely suggest people go over there and check that out. We're, you know, and we talked about this a little bit, Francis. You know, we'd like to have you come back periodically, too, just to maybe give us updates on how things are going with the film and whatnot. If you,
well,
if
sure,
you're cool
we could,
it.
You know, finish answering that question about the other challenges of independent films, and I'd be glad to.
Yeah.
That, so, sounds great.
It'll definitely, we'd love to have you come back on again. You know, we thank you for, you know, hanging out with us. You know, the original idea, we were just going to have you come on for about a half an hour and just talk high level about the film. But fortunately, we were able to talk, get really deep into it. So that was really cool. And, I mean, we really appreciate you coming on and hanging out as long as you did.
And I want to do this again.
Definitely,
so,
for sure.
Oh, yeah. Me too. I mean, you guys definitely know what you're doing.
Thank you.
Despite you guys joking around in the beginning. You know what you're doing. When we went to your website for the first time, we were really impressed.
Really?
How much you got a lot of information, and it just shows.
Well,
know,
thank
you. Running the show, I know what you're doing, and there's a lot of responsibility there.
Thank you.
We appreciate hearing that. That makes us go, yeah, you know, maybe we're, you know, because you talk about direction.
Right.
We're like, okay, what are we doing with this thing?
There's been a lot of things. We're like, we don't know where we're going, really.
Yeah,
and I understand.
We
that.
Have to step back and take stock.
Exactly.
You know?
Figure out what we're doing.
Same thing with this film.
Exactly. Hang tight on the line for 1 second, Francis. We're going to go to break here again, guys. Coming up, we have Doug Yerchi coming on. And
I wonder how many people don't know that name. Or I shouldn't say don't know that name. I wonder how many people don't know that they already know that name.
They're going to know.
That's what I should say.
Well, when we're done here, everybody's going to know this name.
Good.
Because we got some serious things to talk about.
Because I know everybody listening already has benefited from Doug Yerchi, what Doug Yerchi does.
Absolutely.
And how out there he is and how he, you know, keeps everybody informed whether they know it or not. And I want people to realize that. And when we're talking to Doug Yerchi, it's going to be, this is a dream come true for me. So
absolutely.
This will be excellent.
This is Ghostly Talk. I'm Scott L.
And I'm Doug.
I'm Will.
We'll be right back after this.
True science will not deny the existence of things because they cannot be weighed and measured. It will rather lead us to believe that the wonders and subtleties of possible existence surpass all that our mental powers allow us clearly to perceive.
We must ignore no existence whatsoever. We may variously interpret or explain its meaning and origin, but if a phenomenon does exist, it demands some kind of explanation.
A quote from the Principles of Science, William Stanley Jevons, 1835 to 1882.
We'll be right back. Hey, human scum! This is Odorous Jurassic, master of your planet, and you're listening to Ghostly Talk!
There's nothing like listening and talking about paranormal activities, I'll tell you what. Me and Peggy, oh yeah, we listen to Ghostly Talk every night, I'll tell you what.
This is Ghostly Talk.
Oh, you started.
Yeah, I started. You see how fast it was, though?
That one was just like,
wham. Yeah, it totally cut off.
All right.
This is Ghostly Talk, I think, sort of.
Kind of.
We're sort of. Well, it's been a long weekend, man.
It has. And that last, talking about Morrow Road, of course, jazzes me up.
Yeah, I mean, it's really cool to see somebody working on something like that. You know, we got to thank Francis again, because the original idea, he was only going to come on from like 6 to 6:30.
And he ended up sitting
for an hour and a half with us. But we really got to know a lot of neat things. So, you know, thank you again, Francis. We're going to have him come back on again.
Definitely.
In the meantime, though, I know, Doug, you're excited about this.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am
equally, if not more, excited about this.
Okay.
Our guest that we have coming on right now is a writer, artist, and inventor. He has studied the ancient mysteries for over 30 years and was married to a trans channel. He has lectured at Carnegie Mellon University and California State at Northbridge. For 2 years, he was also a background artist for The Simpsons TV show. Who doesn't know who The Simpsons are, right? And now he promotes his unique theories. For example, what we're talking about tonight, the Atlantis-Tesla connection. So I want to welcome Doug Yerche to the show. How you doing, Doug?
Great, Scott. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's a pleasure. We've been waiting for this for a very long time.
Well, here's what I wanted to say. This is what I've been waiting for. Like, when did you put him on the schedule? Like 3 weeks ago or whatever?
I don't remember. It was a while ago.
And I'm like, okay, here's the thing. I read ParanormalNews.com all the time, right? And your name is on there more than anybody else. That's why.
I'm getting a lot of flack from some... gung-ho people against the war, or for the war. I'm against the war, but anyway.
Well, that'll happen whenever you put yourself out there like you do and we do, because, I mean, face it, we're out there too here at Ghostly Talk, and our opinions get sometimes, you know, some flack, but I think it's worth it. I think it's worth it to be out there, to be what you write, all those incredible articles.
Thank you. I was going to ask you where you found me, so it was Paranormal News?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Our friend Jeff, who runs that site, just... absolutely amazing, and you are your articles almost always there, and you're always up there. So you are out there. You're writing. You're investigating. You're doing, and I respect that so much. I can't even put it into words. And no, it should be the opposite. Thank you. what an incredible thing, you know, to be able to go and here's a name that I'm so familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, I didn't know that, you know, that I just didn't know until I saw your name on our schedule that I was like, oh, my gosh. I called.
It's like I'm famous. You know, I'm not famous. I may be getting a published book later on this year.
Okay.
But I'm not famous yet.
Well, all I can say is I telephoned Scott L. And I don't make phone calls and I don't email, right? I telephoned Scott L. and I said, do you know who Doug Yerche is? And he goes, yes, of course I do. And I said, I have been reading his articles for years on ParanormalNews.com. And he's like, that's where I saw the name. You know, it's like, yeah, you are quite, this is an honor. Thank you for keeping us
I'm stirring the pot, and I piss people off.
Excellent.
And I get compliments, so I know I'm doing something right.
Exactly. So, yeah, keep it up. I'm honored to talk to you. This is excellent. And the topic tonight,
we're going to cover a lot of stuff. I mean, this is, we didn't really set down, like, you know.
A rule.
Like, we had to talk about this from, like, 8:45 to 9 p.m. or anything
like that. We never do. It always goes off into 87 different subtopics. But, yeah.
I'd like to start off by just talking about, like, a background, like, how it began for me.
I'd love to know that, Doug.
Yeah, and it started with sort of a ghostly experience. Like, I've never seen ghosts or anything like that, but I had a experience with the other side, if you will, you know, and I was 20, 2 years old. It was 1973. Mm-hmm. I had I quit college. I was an art major. I got an art gallery together, and in she walked, my soulmate. You know, bang, when you know that you've seen this person before, you know, mm-hmm. you just know that she walked into my art gallery, and she like never walked out. We started living together where we shouldn't. It wasn't zoned for residential, but we had to be together.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just instantly, there's this magnetism there. And I found out she was a super psychic. 1 month after we got together, she's telling me about how she would like meditate and communicate with passed on spirits. So I had a mother I was very close with. I was 2 months premature. Oh, the only child. I wasn't even supposed to be born.
Mm.
And I think that's why I take life kind of seriously, because I shouldn't be here. And I want to know everything. I want to know every question. I have the heart of a scientist. And she came in, and so I had my mother, who had died about 2 years earlier. So one night, an entire new world opened up for me that I never knew existed. And she was trying to contact my mother.
Mm.
And what happened is, I think she actually did. Now, this is a psychic that could leave her body. I mean, it's 1973, you know, before Shirley MacLaine and all that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now we've heard of channeling. Now we've heard of the out-of-the-body experience and all that. But back mm-hmm. then, I'm just a kid.
Oh, yeah.
And it was all very new. I think the thing that spoke through her was my mother. But what happened is, something went wrong, you know, and she could not get back into her body. My mother had left, and they were like going to exchange places again. You know, my mother, who was there,
mm.
was going to leave, and her name's Kathy, my ex-wife now.
Mm.
We were married for 4 years, 73 to 77,
mm.
and she couldn't get back into her body. Now imagine that, if you have an out-of-the-body experience, but can't get back in. And, you know, I found out that there's no such thing as amnesia. When somebody has amnesia, they have been taken over, and they don't know where they've been for the last day or hours or whatever. Somebody has used their body, and it's really that type of experience. Now, not that this happens to everybody, or,
mm.
you know, it's a very rare type of thing. So during this four-and-a-half, she could not get back into her body, and
mm.
the strangest thing in the world happened. Other passed-on spirits that are just there on this other side or whatever came into her body. So the body came back to life, and it was like heavy breathing. The body came back to life. It wasn't her. It wasn't Kathy. It was someone else who had died. One woman died like in 1945. And then I thought it was Kathy. It wasn't. I had to talk this person out of the body so that it could be empty, so that she could come back in. She did. So this soul or whatever did that. And it was somebody else. Again, not Kathy. This went on the entire night.
Oh, my
God. No Kathy, no Kathy. And I'm just going crazy here. Finally, make a long story short, finally something else came into the body, not a passed on spirit. After about four, one was a girl who died of a drug overdose in California. We were in Pennsylvania. I come from the Pittsburgh area, and this happened in Pittsburgh. My gallery was called the Art Trek,
mm-hmm.
and this higher entity, something that wasn't someone who died, an alien. I've called this a indirect close encounter, because, you know, I've seen UFOs, but I've never been abducted to my knowledge, you know, whatever. But this was a higher entity that through the whole 4 years of the marriage, I had these sessions where she had this, once this entity, and she gave her name as Unica. I'm not sure what that means, except for that after 4 years of this, we had our closest friends in on it, and maybe she was unifying all of us, I don't know, but
mm-hmm.
about 10 of our closest friends were able to witness and experience this also, because we were learning so much. Suddenly I had access, this heart of a scientist that I am, wanted to know these questions. And damn, here was an answer box. Here was an access to something that I could get answers from. And I don't say they were all correct,
mm-hmm.
because there were, and it wasn't just one entity. So there are dark entities, there are positive entities, you know, the light and the dark and the good force and the bad force. We were screwed over, we were played with, we were told great truths, all of it. There was even a sort of like a war going on using Kathy's body between these good entities and the bad ones. So it was hard to find out what was the truth.
Well,
not.
I know one time, Doug, well, we've had these mm-hmm. people on a couple times actually on the show. There are a couple of they're a married couple, ironically, by the name of Mick and Sylvie Avery.
Mm-hmm.
And Mick is a gentleman who channels, another gentleman named Gregory, who, I'm trying to remember how this gentleman actually passed away back in, like, I believe it. God, what was it, like the 1600s?
1600 or 1700s in a carriage accident.
He died in a carriage.
A horse.
Yeah.
A horse accident.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, the thing with that is we've had him on twice, and Mick actually channeled this gentleman, you know,
on the air, right?
And the thing was,
we interviewed Gregory
through
Mick and Sylvie.
Yeah, and the thing was, I feel your excitement about this, because when this gentleman was channeled and he's like, you know, it was a different person. Okay,
it was a completely different person. It was not Mick.
If you probably checked into it, they could probably say things like through history that could confirm that. You know, I'm a very strong believer in reincarnation.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things. That's two of the main things I was told: how Atlantis is real and how reincarnation is absolutely real.
Well, what happened, I'm just wondering it sounds like you had the same feeling we had, because when you come in contact with something like this firsthand,
it was new to us, too. Just like when, you know, you and your ex-wife, and suddenly this is happening,
mm-hmm.
I imagine at first you were probably, if it was like when we did it, we were incredulous, we were like, okay,
it was incredibly humbling experience.
Well, at first it was like, this isn't happening, is it? This isn't true, this isn't real. But then as we kept going and talking with this gentleman who was clearly not the trans channel himself,
mm-hmm.
We learned a lot.
Well, the feeling that I had.
And it was humbling, yeah.
Yeah, the feeling, exactly that. I'm wondering how you felt, Doug, when this happened, because I was like, you can listen to the audio. I listened to this show a bunch of times in a row. And when this gentleman came on, we were like, hi. what do you say to this person,
now?
Right?
But you had an opportunity over a number of years, though.
Four years.
Wow.
Right. And that's the thing. I was a house painter at the time. I'd come home from work. The gallery didn't work. I was a house painter. I'd come home from work, and Kathy would tell me, we're going to have a session tonight. You know, she would just be informed psychically, and there would be something that they would want to tell us. And there would be times where I could just ask any question at all. And the main question, where did the human race come from?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is something that the books just don't have it right, because there's these great traditions of church and evolution and von Däniken and all these different views. And I've lectured a few times, as you mentioned, and every time I would give a talk, I would say how, you know, all these other views that are out there about where we are, Genesis, has us in a simple form, you know, at Garden of Eden, or the primates, or von Däniken, an alien advanced the primates. It's still a view where we evolved from this planet, and that's where my view completely differs. If I could make it very simple, we landed here. We landed here and this is what I've learned. You know, I'm coming to this, and I will give evidence of this, but we landed here in an advanced state. We can't build the Great Pyramid today. We can't move these great monoliths today. We have not progressed.
Mm-hmm.
We have actually devolved. And there's a lot of evidence of this. And that's where I sort of differ from everything. And to get back to the story, the marriage didn't work after 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
But the main thing was at this one point, and 5 feet away from me right now is this globe, this black, the oceans are black. It's just an old globe that I have. This is 33 years ago. I asked this entity, where did we come from? And it wasn't Kathy, it was her body, but it was this thing that put these little stickers on 13 different locations on the globe and told us, didn't tell us all the information, because they would say it would mean more to you if you discovered it on your own rather than us handing you the answers on a silver platter.
Mm-hmm.
So they just told us clues, and it just motivated me to do this research. Well, I was devastated after the marriage broke up. And so I was back home, and before that, like I said, she put these stickers on the globe, 13 different locations, and said they were computer parts. This was Atlantis. They all worked together. That's really all I was told. And then after the marriage broke up and everything, I came across, I mean, people still don't know who Tesla is. So Nikola Tesla.
Not here.
Everybody
knows
here.
Oh, good. But even people who are experts on Tesla, I don't think really know the true significance, in other words, I've applied Tesla to the ancient mysteries, and not too many people have done that, because I've made this incredible discovery. I just threw myself into Tesla books, doing this research and UFOs, and I bought all the ancient mystery type books and that. And reading Tesla, I found out that he built that first tower in Wardenclyffe, 200-foot tower on New York, because that's where the main population was around 1900, this great discovery he made in 1899 in Colorado Springs. So now he's going to give the world wireless electricity,
exactly,
which we certainly were not ready for.
Mm-hmm.
We would make a weapon out of this before we would freely power cities with this technology. And he was, and I don't know if you came across my article about I wrote an article called Son of Tesla. I came across someone named Arthur Matthews.
Mm-hmm.
And Arthur Matthews may have been Tesla's son. And none of the books say that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is very, very interesting. Because here's a man up in Canada who claims that aliens landed on his property, told him that Tesla was, Venusians, aliens from Venus.
Okay.
And this breaks credibility to a lot of people, but you know, you never know. Tesla certainly didn't seem like he was one of us, and Matthew said that Tesla. For one thing, Tesla gave all his secrets to Arthur Matthews. They co-wrote a book. It was a company called Health Research, and it was a book called The Wall of Light, and it's half written by Tesla, half written by Matthews, and. Matthew said that Tesla had a son. Tesla married in 1890, had a son, and died a rich man. Now that goes against every Tesla book there is just about. And I believe this man. And I asked him, "Are you Tesla's son?" He entrusted all his research to Arthur Matthews, and he wouldn't answer the question. And it was like I was asking Clark Kent whether he was Superman, you know.
Right.
And he just wouldn't do it. And I absolutely believe this. But anyway, going to the Tesla Towers, that would not have provided the world with power. There was going to be 8 other towers. The Wardenclyffe Station in New York was just the first one. And it would, like a radio tower, it would cover a certain range with wireless electricity. Imagine all vehicles, factories, cities getting energy just like we receive a television transmission.
Mm-hmm.
You have the towers, it's sending out the signal, everything would be wireless. Everything would have an antenna. It would be stepped down, all the way to people's homes.
Mm-hmm.
Everything would be powered. But, you know, you have to be very advanced to have this type of system, because if you went to war and blew up the tower, provided all the power, it's sort of like hitting the spot on the Death Star and destroying everything.
You shut everything down. You shut everything down.
If you remember in The Day the Earth Stood Still, how, boom, nothing worked.
Mm.
And what I'm telling you is Atlantean history.
Well, we actually had a glimpse of that here in Southeast Michigan.
Yeah, that was back in 2003, actually, when there was a great power outage in 2003.
The multi-state, multi-day power outage, we were affected by it. And so we here know exactly what you mean when you say the day the earth
That's, of course, with the wired. So it happens with the wired.
Well, here's the thing, Doug, if I can verify this with you, okay?
Go ahead.
We have done... You know, we're in contact with a gentleman named Bill Nell, who we actually had on the show a couple weeks ago. Fascinating individual, and he is like kind of like the go-to guy nowadays when you want to learn about the Philadelphia experiment and the experiments at Montauk. Okay, now obviously Tesla had a part in the Philadelphia experiment when they were doing these experiments. And what I'm really glad you brought up the tower of wireless electricity, because I'm wondering if you could just verify this for me real quick. From what I understand, Thomas Edison brought Nikola Tesla over the ocean to come to America to work with him as his apprentice, and Nikola Tesla devised this system of wireless electricity. Like we said, the pyramid shaped towers, right? And that's what whenever you ever see the pyramid shaped electrical towers, that's Tesla's idea. Now, Thomas Edison was obviously the person who invented the wired, if I'm correct. See, I can't remember any of this stuff. Nikola Tesla...
Actually, that isn't true, but go ahead.
Okay, it isn't true? All right, that's why I wanted to verify.
What happened was
Tesla more invented the light bulb than Edison. Edison was absolutely against alternating current.
That's what I was going to ask you. That's exactly what I was going to ask you, Doug.
Yeah, there was a war of the currents.
Mm-hmm.
Who was going to harness Niagara Falls? It was in a movie called The Secret of Nikola Tesla. It was the last movie that Orson Welles was in. It was a Belgian movie. They've done the story of Tesla in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Last movie Welles was ever in. He played J.P. Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives the traditional story. It says that, oh, how Morgan, the reason we don't have this is because you couldn't make, Morgan couldn't profit. We're freely giving away energy. You can't meter it, but that isn't really true. It was Tesla. That tower was built 1900 to 1905, and the reason it wasn't turned on, Tesla himself. Imagine this. All of his life making the ultimate. He invented electricity. He invented radio, not Marconi.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a merging of electricity and radio. And we aren't. He realized. Now maybe the Venusians are ready for it, but we would make war with it. He knew that Germany was very, First World War, they would make a weapon out of this, and you could actually shatter the earth, just like a glass with a certain pitch, a certain oscillation could shatter a glass. You could, by a buildup of resonance, you can split the earth in two.
That's exactly a lot of the things we've heard about with Tesla, though, too, a lot of his experiments. And he was the kind of person from the research that we've done here, he was dead set against any type of military use for any of his work.
And also nuclear.
Mm-hmm.
He said that was a dirty way. You don't have to do that. That was a dirty, dangerous way. To completely against that.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. But see, now Edison just bought people's inventions. He could never explain that. Explain how they worked. They were other people's inventions. He was an idiot, I'm sorry to say. And it is sacrilege that the power systems today bear his name, Continental Edison.
Mm-hmm.
He was against the AC current. The AC can go over distance. Direct current can go 2 feet.
Mm-hmm.
You need a power station every block to have a DC world, and that's a dangerous world. Would be a planet of power stations. That's what Edison wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the guy just was not in his right mind. But so imagine, like I said, I'm trying to tie this together with my grid
mm-hmm.
that I was given through the ex-wife. Now, imagine 8 others. When I was reading about Tesla, okay, he had the tower in New York, but there was going to be 8 others at specific locations all around the earth.
Mm-hmm.
This would have created an entire grid, our entire atmosphere would be electrified. So that anywhere you had this device, on the top of the Everest, to the bottom of the sea, to anywhere, you would have these wireless devices freely powered, free energy out in the... You wouldn't have to put the power lines there. You would receive it out of thin air like a radio signal.
And our skylines would be much nicer looking without... You know, I... It's kind of funny because, you know, I see a scene and it always seems to be destroyed by power lines.
Well, to me...
That's 100 years old and it shouldn't be there.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right. Well,
and if you live under them, you can develop cancer.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
It's not supposed to be done that way.
But to me, I always look at whenever I think about this guy. Well, first of all, everybody I think on the planet, or, you know, both people who listen to the show, we have lots more listeners than two, but I like to joke about that. But they all know what I think about, because I've said this, I think, twice on previous Ghostly Talks. The city of Utica, Michigan, because we're in Michigan, and the city of Utica, Michigan, Van Dyke is the name of the road, they redid it. And one of the improvements that they did was they took the overhead power lines out. And they, I don't know if they did it underground or whatever they did, but there's no more overhead power lines in downtown Utica. And...
To not mess up the view, I guess.
And it's,
who knows?
And it's beautiful. It's the difference between utopia and, you know... a factory. I mean, it's just like so incredibly different. That's how things are supposed to be, in my own gut feeling. You're supposed to have an unfettered view of the sky and not carry power over your head.
Mm-hmm. Now, the thing is, governments know how to build this, but they know that we can't have a Tesla tower today because we've gone the wrong way. We've built all our computers, our TVs, all the communication systems that we have today are operating on the wrong frequency. If someone were to build that Tesla tower today, and the governments know how to do it, they wouldn't dare turn it on because it would create such a strong magnetic field. You know how, like, you're not supposed to put a magnet on a computer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
We would have static on our TV, static on our phone calls, because that tower, we would have had... there's your internet. 100 years ago, world TV, communicate freely. Mm-hmm. That's the way it's supposed to go, but if used the right way. And I have an old picture that I use, and I have the Great Pyramid, and then I have the Tesla Tower right next to it, and I had lightning bolts going across the top, and it's a symbolic picture saying, which one is the advanced power tower?
Mm-hmm.
It's not the Great Pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, it is the Great Pyramid.
Oh, yeah.
It's
right.
Not. Tesla was just basically using this energy. The ancients mastered it.